Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. Here's a vocabulary term that if you don't know it yet, get used to it, because it's going to become a central factor in whether there's a free and fair and honest presidential election this year. The neutral term is ballot collection. The derogatory term for it is ballot harvesting.
They harvest. You know what harvesting is? They take many, many ballots and they put them all together and then they just dump them and nobody has any idea whether they're crooked or not.
Just because he said it doesn't make it true. You know that. But it's just part of the debate, this collection or harvesting over widespread voting by mail. In the year of coronavirus, when going to the polls in person could be dangerous, especially for older or health-compromised citizens, you know that Democrats want to enable more voting by mail. Republicans do not. Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
This becomes a health issue, as we saw in Wisconsin, standing in those lines for that amount of time, going to places that are enclosed, is dangerous to your health. And again, vote by mail is more democratic. It gives people more options. It removes obstacles and barriers to voting, which is what we want to do, voting by at home.
So the president and other Republicans are using this ballot collection or ballot harvesting issue as one of their main hooks, claiming this is a big way that widespread fraud could take place. Therefore, there should not be widespread voting by mail. So we will now try to explain what this actually is and its relationship to a full vote and an honest vote. Our guest for this is Washington Post politics writer Amber Phillips. She writes for their politics site, The Fix. She has two relevant articles in the last week, one called What is Ballot Harvesting? Harvesting in quotes. And Why is Trump So Against It? And the other one called Examining the Arguments Against Voting by Mail. Does it really lead to fraud or benefit only Democrats? Amber, we appreciate you making time for us today. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. Happy to be here.
So what is ballot collection?
Good question. It's as simple as the name sounds. You can, in many states, I think almost 20, fill out your absentee ballot, seal it, do all the required security checks for that. Like, some states require you to sign the back of the envelope so the election experts can verify you were the person who indeed voted. And then you can entrust it to another person to go drop it off at a mail center or a ballot drop-off location. This might be useful for someone who is elderly and, especially in a pandemic, doesn't want to leave, or states who don't provide prepaid postage and doesn't want to have to deal with finding a stamp. Someone else can go do that for you.
Why did this practice come into being, though? Presumably, even the very large majority of very old and infirm people manage to get things mailed to pay their bills or whatever. So where did ballot collection come from, and with what motivations by whom?
You know, the motivations have, this is something that has been part of some state laws for years, if not decades now, but it really picked up the pace in 2016 when California legalized it in almost all its forms. And the Democratic state lawmaker who pushed this law said, listen, you know, most states allow, let me pause to back up to say, most states allow a family member or household member or a caregiver to drop off the ballot for you, so someone in your house. But this lawmaker said, you know, what if you live alone and I want my aunt to drop it off? I have to work that day. I want to be able to hand it to my aunt or my neighbor and let them drop off that ballot.
And when you say drop off the ballot, I mean, nobody would know or care if somebody else goes and drops it in a mailbox after you fill it out, right? Mm-hmm. So when you're talking about drop off a ballot, do you mean at a polling place?
I mean most states have a mail ballot collection center. It could be on a busy street corner, for example. A lot of states that do almost all mail elections have these all over the place. I guess you could drop it off at a polling place if there was, you know, an open in-person polling place in your state, or just the mailbox on your corner.
And the political context recently, you point out the Democrats used ballot collection with particular success in California in the 2018 midterm elections when they flipped the House after this new California law took effect. What happened in California in 2018?
Yeah, so you probably guys are sensing a trend. This is very California-centric, this idea of ballot collection. So after California passed this law saying, yeah, you can give it to someone who's not in your household to drop it off or mail it for you, Democrats in particular took advantage of that. And, you know, their critics would say took it to the extreme, where what they started doing was tracking at a micro level who had requested a mail ballot, who had not yet voted, and who might be a Democrat or no party voter in that state who might vote for them. And they saw this as another way to get out the vote. Could they go knock on that person's door and say, hey, I noticed that you haven't voted yet. When you do vote, whoever you vote for, we're happy to go drop that ballot off for you. I work for so-and-so's congressional campaign. I should say that Republicans did this as well. You know, the chairman of the state GOP party told Fox News, we were doing this too. A Republican Republican challenger for Congress who did not win said, I didn't like it, but we were doing it too. But Democrats did it with such precision that what ended up happening was when you have mail-in ballots, you have like waves of returns. You have people who go vote in person, and you get those returns on election night. And then a couple of days later, you have people who didn't mail in ballots until, you know, the last day. And what happened was a bunch of Democrats anecdotally turned in mail in ballots at the last day saying, I work for so-and-so's campaign. I was asked to collect as many as 100 ballots from people, and here they are. And Republicans saw these in-person voting results showing them leading. And then all of a sudden, this wave of ballots coming in, being dropped off, showed them losing. And eventually, they lost almost all those races in California, which played a critical role in Democrats taking back a House. So you actually had, at that time, former House Speaker Paul Ryan, who was the Speaker at the time, telling the Washington Post, like raising questions about this practice, going, I don't understand it. How did this help Democrats win? How, you know, I'm not saying it's voter fraud, but he kind of left the door open to alleging that this might be fraudulent in some way, even though it was entirely with the law and Republicans did it as well. But it just kind of rubbed Republicans in the wrong way, the way Democrats carried it out. And one last thing I'll say on that is reporting in California and at the Washington Post actually showed, though, that at the same time as they were publicly criticizing this practice, just feeling like there was something icky about it, national Republicans were privately trying to figure out a way to do this themselves because they saw how Democrats use this tool of ballot collection to get out the vote, to convince more people to vote for them.
Yeah. Well, of course they would do it too, because if something is legal, then both parties are going to try to do it to the best of their ability. You know, I'm thinking of the history of which party targets more effectively using the latest technology. The Obama campaign did it better than the McCain campaign in 2008. That made a difference. The Trump campaign micro-targeted better than the Clinton campaign in 2016. That made a difference. Obviously, from what you're reporting, the Democrats micro-targeted using this tool in 2018 in California better than the Republicans did. Now the Republicans presumably are going to catch up. So the question is, if both parties can play this game and the rules are the same for both parties, is there something about it inherently that works to the advantage of Democrats that Republicans would want to outlaw the practice or restrict the practice or discredit the practice rather than just do it better than the other guy?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's tough to pin down exactly why this has become partisan. Like you said, it's legal in California and a number of other states to do this in some form. California is the most expansive version of this, and that includes Republican-led states. However, there's just this tinge of skepticism among conservatives and Republicans about this practice. They just don't like it. kind of like the way Democrats tend to be more vocally skeptical of money in politics and super PACs, for example. And so I think really since Republicans saw this practice being used against them in the 2018 midterm elections, it has tended to break down as a partisan issue where on the right, they're skeptical of this, they don't like it. And on the left, they say, hey, this is okay, this is legal, we're not changing anybody's votes. President Trump, we're talking about this right now because he has launched like a full-scale crusade against mail-in voting in all forms, which is different than a lot of Republicans who say we want X, Y, and Z restrictions on mail voting, but we're okay with it. He's launched full-scale assault against it. And part of the thing he's picked up on is this ballot collection, which, as you said at the top of your show, conservatives tend to call derisively ballot harvesting. And so, you know, he's tweeted at least once and said a couple times, you know, ballot harvesting, I'm reading here, it is rampant with fraud. Get rid of it. This isn't okay.
And why is the word harvesting, just to put a pin in this, why is the word harvesting a slur in this context? Why does harvesting put a suspicious spin on the practice when ballot collection does not?
Right. Yeah. Election experts I spoke to, again, shied away from using harvesting. My reading of this is that harvesting comes across as like out hunting for ballots. And from there, you could, you know, maybe stretch it. And this is a stretch to say you're out hunting for votes. You're like, you're trying to pull votes out of your community in a way that you might not otherwise should, I guess is the way I read that term. Whereas collection is there's a little bit less of an intent to it. Because when you collect something,
it's more passive. You're just walking around collecting something somebody else did, where harvesting is more active. You're going around planting seeds and reaping what you sow, and somehow that indicates something dirty. All right, listeners, your questions on voting by mail, including the practice of ballot collection or ballot harvesting, welcome here for Amber Phillips from The Washington Post, 646-435-7280, or you can tweet a question at Brian Lehrer or call 646-435-7280. Let's look closer at the fraud allegations, or at least the allegations of potential for fraud with respect to these kinds of things. You point out that the California law allows campaigns to go door to door as often as they want to offer to collect the filled in ballots and drop them off to election officials, but the designated collector cannot interfere with the ballot's return. Okay, whatever interfere means. But Republicans are saying that's not good enough because campaign operatives could easily get away with coaching voters in their homes, misleading them into voting for their candidate, bribing them, asking them to leave the ballot unsealed and then messing with it, telling them, don't worry, I'll fill it out for you, and getting blank ballots to have their way with. All those things can take place in the privacy of people's homes and nobody will ever know. Can a law protect against those things?
Well, some states have tried to limit, you know, how expansive this practice is. For example, in California, just a couple years later, what they ended up doing is saying, okay, campaign operatives can't get paid per every single ballot they collect. The idea being there to try to take off some of this potential hypothetical pressure that these operatives might have to get that person to hand over that absentee ballot.
Getting paid by the piece, in other words.
Right, paid by the piece. Campaigns can still hire people and say, go door to door, please, and try to ask for these ballots, but they can't pay them to bring them hundreds of ballots back. California also made it illegal for employers to say, hey, why don't you bring in your ballots for us? We'll drop them off. The idea being there, you don't want to pressure your employees to have to tacitly vote a certain way. Mm. Other states have tried to make this much more local in a way that cuts out campaigns. For example, what state is it? It's in the West. Hang on.
Is it Arizona?
I'm thinking of Montana, but okay. Arizona we should mention as well. Montana limited the amount of ballots people can collect and drop off to just 6. So the idea there is that they're trying to make it more of a neighborhood thing. Like, you know, I don't know, you have a couple elderly people in your apartment complex. Do you want to ask, hey, do you want me to drop off this ballot? Was
right.
The focus there. And you had Montana officials as they were debating that law saying, I don't want a so-and-so 70-year-old grandma being harassed
right.
all the time to try to get this ballot
yeah.
in.
6 is like nothing. That's not ballot harvesting in any way. In Arizona, I'm seeing in your article, says no one other than a family member, a household member, or a caregiver can return your ballot. So that's really restrictive.
Right. That's really restrictive. That's probably the most restrictive. And as I say in the next sentence there, you know, this is something Republicans in Congress push for. They want that to be federal law, which would not eliminate ballot collection, but make it much more narrow.
And are there things that the Democrats want to be federal law? Is there some kind of mail-in ballot provision in the HEROES Act that Pelosi and the House have passed, but the Senate hasn't?
No, not specifically related to ballot collection that I'm aware of. They don't want to restrict it in this manner.
I meant to enable it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, let me say they certainly don't want to restrict it, is what I was trying to say, but I don't know of any efforts to try to enable it or to try to protect this or enshrine it in law, other than to give states much more money, which they say that they want, to figure out how to handle this influx of ballots to count. I mean, that's the issue Democrats are really concerned about, is on election night or the couple days after the election, and you have this rush of ballots coming in, however they got to you, how can you count those? If you're a state like Louisiana that typically has a 5% return rate of absentee ballots in a normal election, and suddenly that goes up to 40, 50, 60, 70%, how do you count them? So that's where Democrats tend to focus their conversations about this.
Before we take some questions from listeners, and if you're just joining us, my guest is Amber Phillips from the Washington Post, as we're explaining this hot button issue that President Trump and other Republicans are using to try to work against widespread voting by mail this November, called ballot collection, or derogatorily, ballot harvesting. Before we go to phone calls with listener questions on that, there was one congressional race from 2018 that got overturned on the basis of an alleged absentee ballot collection fraud scheme. And ironically, I guess, it was committed on behalf of a Republican in North Carolina. What happened in that case?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So in 2018, there was a competitive congressional election in North Carolina. A political operative for this Republican candidate ended up getting charged with crimes. Prosecutors said this person ran an alleged scheme to illegally collect absentee ballots from two rural counties in North Carolina before turning them in. And not only that, prosecutors have alleged, though he has not been charged with a crime specifically about this, that he was having people collect absentee ballots that were unfilled out and that were not sealed. And so the allegation there is that this is very different than ballot collection, that he was taking unfilled out ballots, filling them in for the Republican candidate, and then mailing them as if that person voted. And again, that's very different from legal ballot collection, which North Carolina doesn't allow to even begin with, which says you can collect the sealed, signed ballot and send that on.
So that's a point of potential confusion by design. Confusion, if I know Trump has brought up, and others have brought up, this Republican absentee ballot fraud case from North Carolina from 2018 as an example of why I don't think we should be able to do this as a nation on a widespread basis. But you're saying that's illegal no matter what. What was done there was illegal. That
right.
was not something that a legal ballot collection law enabled.
Right. And for two reasons, what this person is alleged to have done wasn't legal in North Carolina, even if the ballots were signed and sealed. And then you have this second allegation, which takes it to a whole new level, that this person was collecting unfilled and unsealed absentee ballots. So you're right that this is very different than what operatives in California did in the 2018 midterm elections that had then House Speaker Paul Ryan raising his eyebrows at. Two very different things. But the end result is we have a conversation about ballot collection that resulted in a congressional election getting overturned, which is one of the first times in modern history that's ever happened. So I think you're absolutely right, Brian, to point out that those things can get muddled there in this conversation.
All right. We have callers who are actually all over the map on this with opinions and stories. Here is a story from Dana in Bergen County in New Jersey. Hi, Dana. You're on WNYC.
Hi, how are you?
Okay. So you did what?
I was a council candidate in Hoboken in 2015. And it's sort of interesting seeing this play out as a partisan issue now because the races in Hoboken are nonpartisan and the vote by mail issues are more of a issue between party bosses and people who are in power and reformers, people who are trying to reform the system. And so in the 2015 council race, there was, as there are with other races in Hoboken, vote by mail is widely used by party bosses and politically powerful people to ensure their victory by going to mostly vulnerable populations, like people living in housing authorities and senior centers, to collect the ballots. And from that, you hear really disturbing stories about people, like they, as was said earlier, they know that they get the ballot, and so then they go to the person's door, but it's often not like, oh, hey, I heard you haven't voted. Whoever you vote for, let me collect the ballot. It's often, let me come inside and watch you fill out the ballot, and then I will take it for you. And specifically, there's an exchange of money often, and it's a difficult thing to show, but we did have someone that was convicted of vote-by-mail fraud in Hoboken as a result of their actions in the 2015 race.
What were they convicted of actually doing? Can you get specific? Was it bribing a voter in the way you just described could happen, or do you know in particular?
So this person, his name is Frank Raya. He was more in charge of the operation. So there are people that go out and they actually do like the dirty work, and then there are people that fund it. I'm not 100% sure. I don't want to speak completely incorrectly on this, but I think that it was electoral fraud. Or mail fraud. It might have been mail fraud that was ultimately the conviction. And it's a very, very hard thing to prove.
So
using the mail.
So does your experience as a candidate and with what you just described make you think that ballot collection should be severely restricted under the law?
Yes, I do think it should be severely restricted under the law because not only does it facilitate fraud and set up the conditions where fraud can be easily accomplished, it really puts vulnerable populations at risk. Often the people who are targeted for ballot collection or ballot harvesting are people who depend on these party bosses in some way for their housing, for their jobs. And so they're very ripe targets for bad political actors to go after to stay in power.
And let me go one step further. Because this is being used by the president and his side as an excuse or a reason to be against widespread voting by mail, period. I'm curious if you go that far or if you want to separate the two and say this ballot collection presents opportunities for fraud or pressure in the way you described, but people should still be able to have universal voting by mail.
I don't. I've thought about, and I've really spent a lot of time thinking about this because I was involved in it in such a personal way. I don't think it can be reformed. I think if we want seniors and we want people to vote, what we have to do is drive them to the polling stations and ensure that we make it as easy as possible, make Election Day a federal holiday, allow voting over multiple days. But I think somebody being able to go and vote in private and have that privacy absolutely certain is an important part of maintaining democratic elections.
And let me just ask you, since you're a politician who ran for office, and listeners are probably wondering, are you a Republican and Trump supporter?
So, funny story, I was a Democrat for 15 years, a very, very strong activist Democrat, and I'm now a Republican with mixed feelings about the president. As most politicians, I have nuanced views on pretty much everything that's happening today in the world.
Dana, thank you so much for your call. I really, really appreciate it. Call us again. And so, Amber Phillips from the Washington Post, what were you thinking as you heard that story and her relationship to it?
Yeah, thanks so much, Dana, for sharing like your actual on-the-ground experience of that. New Jersey, I know, tends to be a state where party bosses are like really involved in politics. You can't run without their approval. I'm not sure that is something that is not the way politics is practiced across the nation. And, you know, that could underscore an argument for having state-by-state decisions on how expansive or restrictive you make ballot collection. But I want to make one broader point about mail voting and the potential for fraud. I looked at, you know, the arguments mostly thrown out by President Trump against mail voting. The research does not show there's any statistically significant fraud. Experts will say there is the potential for it since you're voting at your home. Nobody's watching you. It's different than a polling place, but they're just in five states that do this regularly for years and years and years. There's no example of fraud. But that being said, ballot collection is one place where a distorted aspect of that caused a congressional election in North Carolina to get overturned. So, if we're going to talk about fraud and mail-in ballots, ballot collection is the place to focus on this discussion.
So this whole area of mail-in ballots, and again, I want to really be clear in this conversation that universal mail-in ballots is the big issue here. This is the real issue. Harvesting or collection is a subset, a particular issue within the realm of mail-in voting, and one that the president is trying to use to discredit all mail-in voting. And this whole area is one of those where Twitter waded into fact-checking the president, first time they ever did that, this week, and that's leading to its own subplot of critiques of their critiques. Have you followed the details of what specifically Twitter found worthy of correcting rather than just treating as opinion or political argument on mail-in voting?
Yeah, what Twitter saw, this is a big step for a social media company. Facebook doesn't do this. In fact, Facebook's CEO Mark Zuckerberg criticized Twitter for doing this. What they saw was the president making a baseless claim about mail-in voting. He alleged, you know, I don't have the exact tweet in front of me. It would cause widespread fraud, rigged elections, language like that. And Twitter said, okay, like here is this. In fact, statement without any facts that affects our civics and our elections. It's not about policy, which can be debated on one side or the other in Congress. Here's this debate about actual elections that is just like they're baseless. So what they did was they tagged a little, click here to get the actual information about mail-in ballots. And when you click that link, you get led to on Twitter a ton of articles and tweets correcting the president, saying this is wrong, what he said, and here's why, which is, like you said, Brian, leading to a whole other drama. The president has alleged that they limited his free speech. You know, his White House is working on an executive order that would make it easier to sue or go after these social media companies for taking down tweets. This is this whole other tangle of social media and journalism and politics and fact-checking that mail-in ballots has led Twitter and the president down. But it's really interesting that they chose this to correct. And I think it was because this is about a civic issue, not a policy that can be debated.
Nora
and the facts
Bloomfield.
Are what they are on mail balloting.
Indeed. Nora in Bloomfield, you're on WNYC. Hi, Nora.
Hi, guys. Listening to that last caller, I have to say, New Jersey politics, man, it's crazy. But I really hope that we can find some way to verify and make the mail-in voting work, because earlier you guys were talking about why Republicans really seem to be against mail-in voting. And I think, you know, they've done so much work, the Republicans have done so much work of voter suppression by closing polling places and gerrymandering districts, that vote by mail would really help to re-enfranchise many of these people they've worked so hard to disenfranchise. So to me, that's pretty clear.
Nora, thank you very much. Amber, evidence for that? And I note in the headline of your piece from last week, one of the questions is, does it really favor Democrats to have mail-in voting?
Right. It does not, according to the studies of this. But it does, as Nora said, elevate people who might not otherwise have participated in an election. Studies do show that low propensity voters, people who may not participate in a primary, but they might go vote for presidential, who might only vote the top of the ticket and might not take time to vote down the ballot, tend to complete their ballots and do it more often when it's on their desk and they have a couple days to do it. That President Trump has taken that, and a couple other Republicans as well, and said, well, if you're a low propensity voter, political science says you tend to be Democratic, you tend to be younger, maybe an immigrant, a person of color, and they tend to vote Democratic. So mail-in ballots, therefore, allow Democrats to vote at higher numbers. The study did not show that second half of President Trump's argument, or several studies, I should say. They show, yes, there's more people participating, but we just saw no evidence that Democrats participated in higher numbers than Republicans. Utah is a state with almost all mail elections. They tend to vote Republican very regularly.
You mentioned that there are states that have universal mail-in ballot already. For the benefit of the people in all the other states, what does experience show with respect to voter fraud or the ability to get an honest vote in the states that already use mail-in ballots to a tremendous degree?
Yeah, that there is no example or no statistically significant example of fraud any more than there might be at in-person polling states that have, you know, the more traditional way of voting. There just aren't examples of that. That being said, election experts I spoke to on kind of both sides of this say they worry about how states who are rushing to implement more mail voting or ramp up their absentee voting. And there really is, for our purposes, no difference between the two. You vote by mail, you send election officials count it. They worry that states are going to be able to do that well. You know, one voting expert wrote in the Washington Post that I quote, rushing to put this into place nationwide would surely bring some unpleasant and unintended consequences, without really elaborating what that might be. But they point out that states like Washington and Oregon have had years to put together best practices. And I've talked to secretaries of state in states like Iowa and Minnesota that are trying to figure out, how do I do this in a couple months? And they do say that they're talking to Washington and Oregon and California and Utah to get best practices. Like, they're getting told, make sure that voter has a way to sign the ballot once it's sealed so you can compare that signature to, you know, what you have with them, with their DMV and their license
card,
and make sure
it's
that person. Right. You know, one option that Republicans tend to favor, but Democrats do it too, is send registrations out to your voter rolls. And so people have to say, yes, I'm Amber Phillips. Yes, I live here. Yes, I want to vote. And then it's kind of a way to clean up your voter rolls, so you're not just sending out ballots to everybody. There are critics to that. California is sending out a mail-in ballot to every registered voter saying, I don't want them to have to go through that extra step. They shouldn't have to apply for these mail ballots. because in a normal election, they wouldn't have to apply to walk into the polling place. So there's no example of fraud in these five states that do mail elections. But that being said, there's a lot to think about for the rest of the nation as they ramp up mail voting by their primaries this summer and then the election this November.
So final question. Who gets to decide? Because if people watch the president's news conferences, or if they watch Fox and MSNBC and CNN, national networks with generally national angles, it makes it sound like the country's either going to do this or the country's not going to do this. But how much is it really state by state? And it doesn't matter what the president thinks or Nancy Pelosi thinks.
Right. It is almost entirely state by state. Like I said, Iowa, Republican state, is out there doing this quietly. Nevada is a Republican secretary of state doing this. Any number of states, they're all trying to figure this out. How do I keep my voters safe? That being said, they need more money from Congress. Every secretary of state or election official you talk to will tell you that. And so it does matter how much Pelosi and McConnell and President Trump support this, because they say Congress gave us a down payment in that first CARES Act they passed a couple months ago, but we need a lot more money to figure out how to do this.
Ah, so that's where Congress comes in. It's money to enable states to do it more aggressively that will pass or not.
Right, exactly. And right now there is, I wouldn't say no prospect, but a narrow prospect in the next couple months for Congress to pass, another $1 trillion+ bill to deal with everything related to COVID. And a big chunk of that Democrats want to be about elections to help states, buy the machines to figure out how to count this stuff, hire more staff, pay for prepaid postage, print new ballots. I mean, it's not as simple as just saying, okay, let me take this ballot in the polling place and mail it out to you.
Amber Phillips, reporter for the Washington Post politics section known as The Fix. Thank you so much. People know so much more about this than they did a half hour ago. Thank you.
I enjoyed being on. Thank you, Brian.